I'd like to welcome everybody to our call. My name is Winder Lyons, and I have Carlton Defrachaux on with us. Carlton, welcome to the call.
Glad to be here.
Now, tell us, what's the formal name of the organization that you head?
Winder, I'm with the Pontchartrain Basin Foundation. The Pontchartrain Basin Foundation is a private nonprofit. We were established in 1989. It's kind of unique as a nonprofit. We were actually created by the state legislature as a private corporation with the mission to oversee the restoration of not only Lake Pontchartrain, but the entire Pontchartrain Basin, basically the 10,000 square miles of southeast Louisiana from Baton Rouge to the Mississippi state line, from north of the Florida parishes by Macomb, Mississippi, out to the Chandeliers. And the reason the legislature created LPBF, Lake Pontchartrain Basin Foundation, because there was an outcry of local citizens in the late 80s that's when Lake Pontchartrain was still a brown mess, very polluted and not a good place for a fish or a human to be in. So it was a result of that outcry, the state legislature said, citizens, you guys are right. While many of our state agencies have tried to do something about it, we haven't been successful. So the state created LPBF as a independent entity. To their credit, there was a godsend. They gave it a one-time funding, kind of seed funds to get going. And they set it up that the organization, its board of directors, is a bit different from traditional nonprofits, too. It's not necessarily the movers and shakers in the community. It's actually nominated and elected by the members of the organization. So it is truly a representative organization. And we do everything from act as watchdogs for water quality, pollution issues, to coastal restoration. And we try to base everything we do on the best science available. So that's it in a nutshell. In fact, this year will be the 20th year anniversary of the Pontchartrain Basin Foundation.
That's very cool. Now, so basically you're everything east of the Mississippi?
Yep, we're everything from if you think of the tip of the Louisiana boot kind of on the map, that's us. Everything from Baton Rouge down to New Orleans and out to the Chandelier Islands.
Okay. And so then Cary St. Pays Group, the Terrebonne,
Barry Cary Terrebonne. Immediately to our west, on the west bank, so yes.
They're the west side of the Mississippi.
That's correct.
So you guys kind of divide up the state.
What we try to do is we try to take a watershed approach, everything within a drainage basin, and if any drop of rainfall that happens in that 10,000 square miles of Pontchartrain will eventually, even if it starts up by Macomb, Mississippi, it's going to eventually wind its way down toward Lake Pontchartrain. And the same thing with the Barataria-Terrebonne Basin. If the rain falls on the west side of the Mississippi River, it will go to the south and west over toward Barataria and ultimately down toward Grand Isle.
In reading the sort of landmark book, Bayou Farewell,
mm-hmm.
The case is made pretty strongly that we have a very small window of opportunity left to really begin the process of saving the Louisiana wetlands from extinction and the catastrophic consequences of that. First of all, what is your organization's stance or thoughts or position on that issue? And let's use that as a place to really begin the conversation.
We're behind the power curve. We in Louisiana are behind the coastal restoration power curve. If we look back at just history, the development of coastal Louisiana happened over about 7,000 years when the Mississippi River wiggled back and forth four different times. It created these 6,000 plus square miles that were coastal Louisiana. What's really frightening, more than frightening, scary, is that just in the 20th century, from the 1930s, once the Mississippi River was levied, when we humans unintentionally cut off the sediments to the coast, from that point to today, we have lost over 2,000 square miles of our coast, actually about 2,100 square miles. And if you look at it a little bit tighter time frame, Wander, in mid-1950s, from after the Second World War, is when the human impacts really started kicking in, particularly with the dredging of the navigation canals that really chopped up, crisscrossed our coast, and a lot to do with unintentional consequences of exploration for oil and gas through the coast. That really changed the plumbing, the natural plumbing, the way the water flows, and that allowed saltwater to intrude into areas that were historically brackish or maybe even freshwater swamps. The cypress swamps that used to ring certainly the St. Bernard Parish below New Orleans, even some areas of Lake Pontchartrain, because salinities have increased so much. We don't see cypress in the Pontchartrain basis in any numbers until you get over toward Lake Maurepas now. It's a long way around of saying, yes, we are more than alarmed about it. Frankly, we're frightened. There is an urgency in our opinion, to get out there and not only – first thing we got to do is stop the hemorrhage, stop the demise of our coast, and then start a very aggressive restoration program.
Now, is it fair to say that the know-how, the technology exists to actually orchestrate and correct the problem?
Yes. We don't know it all. By no means do we know it all, but we know enough now to begin, and certainly to stop the disappearance of the coast that is ongoing even as we speak. There are an array of alternatives. Actually, the best thing we can do is try to mimic Mother Nature. There's no real rocket science here, but just try to get back out there to rebuild the natural features of our coast that used to be those first lines of defense, the natural ridges, the old relics, the banks of the relic streams through the coast, the land bridges, the large land mass areas like east of the river. Those would be Biloxi Marshes, Breton Marshes, west toward Bitnep would be the Barataria, obviously land bridge, and the Barrier Islands. You know, chandeliers on the east side of the river, they were from Hurricane George's in 1998 till Katrina in 2005, the chandeliers lost over 60% of their surface area. They just repeat after repeat of those big storms just tore them up. And we're seeing a lot of the same thing happening on the west side of the river. It's to answer your question, do we know it all? No. Do we know enough to begin? Heck yeah.
And so why aren't we?
I get in trouble when I say this. I got in trouble just a couple of days ago at a conference with the Corps of Engineers and many of the state folks. But the reality is we don't have the commitment. And while we talk about it a lot, the federal government in the state of Louisiana is committed right now to building levees. While they have, to their credit, both the feds and the state are adopting what we, Lake Pontchartrain Basin Foundation, Coalition Restore, the coast of Louisiana, are promoting the multiple lines of defense strategy, that idea of using those natural features of the coast that I mentioned earlier, like the barrier islands, the land bridges, the ridges, is actually our first lines of defense to knock down the storm surge, enhance storm protection. The state agencies, the feds, are adopting those, but at this point, they're just giving them lip service. There are no – what's really sorry right now, the only real coastal project the only project that's in the coast that's going to make any quantifiable difference right now is plugging the Mississippi River Gulf Outlet. And that little bitty – that plug, which is what – I should back a step here just a second. That is a major accomplishment in itself, because it will – start to reverse the hydrology or restore the hydrology that we used to have before that 40-mile channel was dredged south and east of New Orleans, bisecting our coast. But that little project isn't even considered a coastal project. It's considered a navigation deauthorization project. So at the moment, we are, as far as coastal projects go, they're little bitty things that are a couple acres here, a couple acres there, but there is nothing that is truly integrated. And that's where the big concern for, I think, many of us out that are in this trying to champion it each and every day, that the reality is we are still losing coast at a rate of three times more than we're restoring it. And
we're losing.
Every acre of coast that we restore, we're losing three. So if you look at the delta there, that means that if you're a banker or just a businessman, and for every dollar you bring in, you're spending three, that means you're going to go out of business pretty quick.
So we're losing 25 square miles per year these days.
The average land loss rate for the state from the Mississippi line over by the Pearl River all the way to Texas by the Calcasieu Sabine is 20 to 25 square miles per year. That's an average land loss rate. But here's a kicker that really gets frightening. Hurricane Katrina, we lost just east of the river 79.3 square miles in 30 hours. Three times the average land loss rate of the state in 30 hours. If you take Katrina and Rita together, for the entire coast, we lost 200 square miles. Times the average. 200 in 1 month. And that's the kind of stuff that makes a, hey, just as we're talking here, the hair on my arms is standing up.
How do you wrap your brain around 200 square miles of land loss?
It's the best way I can do it, and this will probably cause a little bit more of that hair to stand up. But Lake Pontchartrain itself, if you visualize the lake, it's 600 square miles. So if you would 600 square miles of surface area. So if picture a third of that being lopped off or just erased, that's pretty much what happened during Hurricane Katrina and Rita. And what makes it worse, it's just not in one area. It's spread around the coast, and it makes those, particularly the areas that are very vulnerable, where there's just a little piece of a relic marsh or something, a barrier from the shoreline into an interior pond. Once those break and you get that open water interacting with the interior pond, then it's just everything goes to heck in a handbasket in a very fast way. So it's the urgency is, I'm sounding like I'm guess on a box here preaching, but the urgency is real, and the biggest concern I have is that many of us in coastal Louisiana, we equate storm protection with levees. Is there a need for levees around highly urbanized area, densely populated areas? Without a doubt, certainly. But the bottom line is levees got us in this problem. And if we just depend on levees alone, the coast is going to continually to encroach, get closer and closer to New Orleans, to Houma, to other coastal communities. And we will never, ever be able to build levees that are higher and wide enough to – it would just be a vicious cycle that would go on forever.
Right. Let's talk about for a moment what's going to happen if we don't actually stop the problem and reverse it.
Well, there's been, I think, some discussion off and on of New Orleans becoming this sliver on the river. And while that is not on the horizon in the near term and in our lifetimes, could that happen in the next century? Sure. I mean, it could actually happen probably quicker than that. If the coast continues to subside, not if, it will continue to subside. That's a natural process. It will continue to erode. The wave energy will eat away at the shoreline. That's natural. These human impacts, the building of levees and cutting off sediments and freshwater input to the marshes, that has stressed the marshes. The hydrologic impacts, those cutting of all those navigation canals, that's allowed the Gulf to intrude in the areas that were historically our robust wetlands that provide those natural lines of defense. If we do not reverse that or do not do something to address that hemorrhage, then in all likelihood, the hemorrhage will, just like a individual, if you get ill and you don't take care of yourself, if that sickness gets a critical mass, it's just going to get worse and worse and worse. And what's happening now to coastal Louisiana is we're seeing the one thing that will survive is nature, and nature will change the dynamic. It's changing from the system we used to, the self-sustaining coastal system we used to have of the cypress swamps in the interior, the very freshwater swamps, to that brackish system, then out to the saline environment, to the coast, that we're losing that brackish and freshwater swamps to conversion to more saline environments. So the bottom line is the saltier waters of the Gulf are coming closer in. Heck, the bottom line is the Gulf is getting closer to the developed areas, and that's what's at some point. Do I think New Orleans will get wiped off the map? No. Could New Orleans become literally an island? Yeah. Could Houma be much more at risk than it is? Definitely. Actually, Houma's been, I think, very, very fortunate to date. And ultimately, we may see, if things don't change, we could just see the old natural relic ridges of the banks of the Mississippi, Bayou Lafourche, Bayou Teche. Those will be the fingers going out into the Gulf, because that would be the only high land left.
What are the impacts of that in terms of practical things that would change people's lives all over the country?
Well, all over the country, the first would be energy. Oil and gas infrastructure will be there. We have if you look at pipeline maps of the state of Louisiana, it looks like a bowl of spaghetti. Pipelines crisscrossing all over the place. The vast majority of these pipelines in our coastal zone were intended to, well, heck, they were placed in areas that were marshes that were not intended to be subject to high energy of open water environments. Those will become much more at risk because of the wave energy. Actually, there have been many instances, unfortunately, of these popping up and breaking with the open water environment. The energy that the country uses, about 30% of what is used domestically, is either produced or is imported through coastal Louisiana. That will be another impact. Look, after any storm now, I guess maybe Ivan was the first one, and then Katrina, Rita, and most recently Gustav Ike. Whenever we have a major storm that hits anywhere near coastal Louisiana, look at the price of gasoline. It spikes up almost immediately, which is a direct indication of the relationship between our coast and the energy infrastructure that the country uses.
If I want understanding what you just said, if this problem is not addressed and the wetlands continue to erode, basically 30% of the production or distribution of oil in this country will be interrupted.
Yes, 30% of the product could be interrupted. We've got the majority of refineries. We've got the distribution system for the product, and the reality is if coastal Louisiana goes, then the demand for energy in this country would be, if we were paying what, $4 a gallon for gasoline last year, there could be a 30% demand on that, so that just conceptually could run the price up another $1.50 a gallon or more. So we'd be looking at $5.50 or $6 a gallon for fuel. It is critical to preserve the coast of Louisiana, if nothing else, just for the energy demands of the nation. But getting back to your question, the energy demands, while that's probably the biggest economic one, fisheries, we've got Louisiana's wetlands, even though we're losing them, 40% of all of the wetlands in the United States, continental U.S., are right here. And the fisheries that we produce, the nursery grounds, the estuarine areas, the areas where the fresh water from rivers meet with the salty waters of the sea, whether it's Pontchartrain, Barataria, Atchafalaya, those are the most productive nursery grounds on the face of the good planet Earth. And the more of the coastal wetlands we lose, and ultimately the less areas there will be for breeding grounds for, doesn't matter whether you're finfish or shellfish or a trout or a crab, they will be impacted. So the fisheries, the U.S. domestic fisheries could be impacted. And that's both commercial and recreational. And there's also this, many people talk about the warm and fuzzy, about the character of our communities, whether it's the Cajun culture, the Spanish, French, colonial, every kind of influence and melting pot that is New Orleans. There is history down here, and it is history in a big way. New Orleans, at one point, was the fourth largest city in the U.S. It, for many of us that are half a century older, we remember when Atlanta was a podunk town and Houston was a bunch of dust in Texas. And if you wanted to go someplace, New Orleans was the place. We would rival New York or any place else for culture, or whether it was anything in the arts. And this community is, in this community, I'm using in the broader sense, coastal Louisiana, it's unique. It is, maybe this is a little bit too parochial for coming from a Louisiana local boy down here, but if it goes, we're losing, the United States is losing, well, from Thomas Jefferson on, when the Louisiana Purchase came about, the United States bought the Louisiana Purchase not because of all the turf to the west, not to to be disrespectful to any of our neighbors and above us or to the west of Louisiana, but the reality is the U.S. bought it because of the location of New Orleans and the Mississippi River. And the Mississippi, again, you know, we're talking getting back to the economic ends. This is what, the fifth largest port system on the planet, from New Orleans up to Baton Rouge. It is, if we lose coastal Louisiana, all of that could be impacted. And the warm and fuzzy on the people in, yeah, we might lose 2 million people on the coast too that would have to move further up north.
So what would that cost?
It could be. That's another thing that's so frustrating. I'm going to back up the clock just a little bit. Pre-Katrina and Rita, the estimates to make our coast and to get it back to a self-sustaining status were about $14 billion. And yes, that's a tremendous number, and it would always frighten me when I'd speak about it. To do it today, the state is reluctant to even talk about the numbers. The federal government has yet to do it, although they're supposed to publish their numbers within the next few months. But the numbers that we're seeing from the state and the feds are in excess of $100 billion.
Well, that was a little bit different number there than the first one.
Yeah. And that's, to put it in perspective, the U.S. government, God bless everybody, I shouldn't have said the U.S. government, but God bless all of the folks throughout the country who have helped us out so much since the storms. The U.S. has put out an estimated $80 to $90 billion on hurricane repairs or relief. And this is not only in Louisiana, but in Mississippi too. With this is just Katrina and Rita since 2005. Of that, if you look at hurricane protection work, levee work, about $14 billion has gone into just building more, higher and better levees and flood walls around Metro New Orleans. And the balance has gone into repairs of the damages. So that's what we're looking at. If we get another, not if, we will get another storm. And it's that we live in a coastal area. If you want to put a bullseye in the Gulf Coast and you look at historically the path of hurricanes, we get them. And we get the most of them because we're right at the center of the daggum, it's negative. We're at the center of the Gulf. And that's the way the weather patterns, push the storms in. So we're going to get more. And those damages, though, if you think about in excess of $50 billion of damages after major storms, and if we look at those every couple of years, we're in this warm cycle now of in more frequent and stronger storms. It's ludicrous not to get out there and try to do everything you can to make that system more robust and cut down on the damages. But unfortunately,
how long would it take?
Some things could happen quickly. I talked a little bit about plugging the MRGO. That little bitty project, it's a $30 million project, which again is a lot of money, but in the grand scheme of things is a drop in the bucket. That one project, just plugging the channel at Bayou La Lutra, that will restore the natural ridge of La Lutra, that old relic ridge. So that's going to get back the Biloxi estuarine area to the north, the Breton one to the south of it. that's going to start to restore that natural hydrology. We'll probably see salinities above La Lutra on the Lake Bourne, Biloxi Marsh side, start to reduce within a matter of months, probably about 2 to maybe even 3 parts per thousand. So that in itself is going to be a major step back toward recreating a self-sustaining system. There are things we can do, pumping sediments to restore some of those natural ridges we talked about earlier, to replenish the barrier islands. We need more reintroduction of Mississippi River. The Mississippi River does two things. First of all, its sediments on the annual flood cycle over those eons and eons, those sediments are what built the coast of Louisiana. We are naturally subsiding or sinking. So without those sediments to replace what's happened as we settle away into the Gulf, we'll just get worse and worse, more and more water. So we've got to reconnect the river to the coast in big ways with spillways, and these will more than likely happen below New Orleans. But we've also got to get this river water, get some more fresh water out into the areas where we've had the salt water intrude. And there are two diversions right now, Carnarvon on the east bank, Davis Pond on the west bank. One, Carnarvon's just below New Orleans, Davis Pond is immediately above it. And these are, while there's been a lot of hype and politically about these are going to be land-building diversions, they were never designed to be land-building diversions. The reality is, in the 90s, when they were finally constructed, these things were kind of like if you're building an airplane, the first one that comes off the drawing board is an experimental version. You never intend it to be an airliner or something that goes into production. It is truly an experimental thing that you learn from. And that's exactly what these two projects were. And over the last 15 years now, we've learned a lot from both of them, particularly from Carnarvon. First, one thing we learned is that fresh water alone is not enough. You got to get sediments out there. The other thing we learned is that you got to mimic the Mississippi River's natural cycle. Try to use those pulses. When the high water comes up, that's when the river's loaded with sediments. Try to pulse the water out in big splurts or a few weeks there when that high water is up to get it out over the marshes and get that overland flow, so you'll get the sediments out into the marshes settling down there. And once the water's out there, the fresh water actually, it stays in the area for a long time because of just the natural storage of the area. So have we learned a lot? Yeah. Do we know it all? No. Do we know enough to get going? More than enough. And will it turn around in the near term? There will be some things that will happen in the near term. Here's the other thing that I don't mean to be to frighten everyone too much, but I do mean to be very sincere. The demise of this coast has been happening since the 1930s, and particularly since since the Second World War, the second half of the 20th century, really in our lifetime, Mwander. And yep. To reverse it will take at least that long, and to really to get it to be in a very robust state will be probably 100 years. Can we see things that will help in the next 10 years? Definitely. Can we see things that will make a demonstrable reduction in hurricanes in the next decade to two decades? Without a doubt. But to get the coast back to a truly robust state, it's going to take at least 20 to 25 years, maybe more.
Well, if harking back just for a moment to what you said, if every time a major storm hits and we have an additional $50 billion of damage, it doesn't take a rocket scientist to figure out we need to put some money in to get this situation handled now.
Yeah, you're exactly right. That's what that.
I mean, Kerry St. Pay. I was chatting with Kerry the other day, and he said, people need to understand, levees are not going to do the job.
He's on target. This levee stuff is levees are what got us into the problem. After this 27 flood of the Mississippi, certainly they did this great thing for economic boom with farming above New Orleans and throughout the country, and actually for training the river for navigation. But unintentionally, those levees started the demise of coastal Louisiana. And more recently, particularly after in the 60s when we started building levees in a big way for hurricane protection, those are the ones that they give you this, they will give you a near-term increase in security, or the feds call it risk reduction now. They don't even call it storm protection anymore because they know the systems will, they may not fail. Hopefully they'll never fail again as we did catastrophically in Katrina, but the likelihood is a storm will come that the levees will be overtopped. Even these massive 20-foot levees around New Orleans will probably be overtopped in the next 25 to 30 years. But levees, that is, I guess, if the, one of the largest concerns I have is that many residents of Louisiana still believe that the solution to storm protection is building levees, and that while a levee may provide a near-term degree of protection, it is not the ultimate solution. All it can do is it will mask. It's kind of like taking an aspirin if you got the flu. You'll feel better for a little while, but it's going to come back, and if you don't take care of yourself, it'll get you.
Well, we have to have as I understand it, there's a multi-tiered approach. There's a whole series of things that start with the barrier islands, and then you have a whole series of grasses and levees.
Yeah,
bayous,
yeah. That,
all
it,
these
that
things.
Again, that's what kind of gets back to the multiple lines of defense approach that the Pontchartrain Basin Foundation, Coalition Restore Coastal Louisiana, and others are championing right now. The cornerstone of it is recreating a self-sustaining coastal system. And to do that, what we're trying to do is, again, it's not reinventing the wheel. It's basically going back to, in the simplest terms, what we did is we went back to before we humans started monkeying with the coast in the pre-1930s, looked at habitat types, where were the freshwater swamps, where was that the intermediate area, where was the real saline areas, and whether it's cypress trees or cordgrass or whatever out there, we started to use that as a baseline of, okay, we knew these habitats were self-sustaining. What were the changes since then? What do we need to do to reverse those changes? And it, much like in a smaller scale, Winder Lake Pontchartrain, when we started with Pontchartrain's restoration in the early 90s when the lake was this brown mess that many called, actually John Hankel, the state senator, late state senator, used to call it a cesspool in a kind of literal but joking fashion.
Yeah.
When we started the restoration of Pontchartrain, what we did was just go around and look for the sources of pollution. Once we identified them, we systematically addressed them, whether it was urban runoff from New Orleans or sewage discharges from the North Shore, the rapidly growing areas of the North Shore, agricultural, dairy runoff. We'd find them, identify them, and try to find a project that would cut off that pollution. Once the pollution was cut off, the lake did the rest. Mother Nature did the rest. By the mid-90s, the water clarity had started to come back. Shell dredging was eliminated. By the late 90s, when we started to cut down the bacteria counts of pollution going into it, we had a lake that was fishable and swimmable again. And in fact, today, as I look out of my office window over it, when you and I were kids, if we had 6 inches of visibility in the lake, that was a doggone good day. Today, the lake's
really
flat, and we can see the bottom, can see the sandbars. So it's
that's incredible.
And that, just using that methodology, is the same thing with the coast. Once you identify the problems, you try to replicate nature's natural processes, certainly accelerate them in some instances whenever we can, like you place sediment to rebuild those natural ridges. That's a natural barrier. Go back there and plug those channels that are allowing salt water to intrude in, such as the Mississippi River Gulf Outlet and others. By doing those simple things, those are the ones that can see near-term impacts, positive impacts, and reverses within, it might be a couple of months or a couple of years. For the longer term, the reestablishment of the cypress forest and others, those are the ones that will take decades.
Right. One more quick thing about what's going to happen if we don't fix this. Talk about the bird life and its impact for the rest of the country, not just in Louisiana.
I'm glad you brought it up. Hey, if many folks, if you think about the fisheries for the country and shellfish and crabs, but the reality is whether you are a duck or a purple martin, this is probably your primary flyway. And, you know, we've got birds that are migrating all over from North America to South America, and they come right down through here. So, yes, if the more of the coast that goes, the less habitat that will be for these guys to winter. Certainly duck hunters have been impacted already to a large degree. They've seen many of their ponds turn to open water. Many of their old, just even hunting grounds that I knew as a kid with my dad in the Biloxi Marshes, this is sorry to say, but they just are no more. It's just all water. The purple martins, these little critters that come from way up north and go way down south to, you know, Yucatan, to Mexico every year, they will come in just a few more months. We'll see them massing around the causeway, and they'll be here for a couple of weeks while they rest up, going back north, and then a couple of months later in the fall, they'll come back down, rest up a couple of days, and then head south. The more distance that gets between the Yucatan and real ground around here, the fewer birds that will be able to make it. So it is certainly an impact to, and I'm naming two species there, but we've got pelicans, seagulls, all the shore birds. Heck, we've even got eagles on the coast again. Eagles are down here, again, much like pelicans, because while the coast is in a state of demise, much of the areas closer in, such as Lake Pontchartrain, they're healthy again. So there's a thriving system in the areas that are further north. Unfortunately, what's happening is we're seeing a conversion of much of these areas that were the historically fresh habitats into this more intermediate. And the bottom line is we're losing the large ecosystems that we used to have there. They are shrinking even as we speak.
Right. Is it the fact that 50-75% of all the migratory birds in this country fly through Louisiana?
Yeah, you're exactly right.
And that the populations are declining already?
Yes. Yes.
And that's pretty bleak. I mean, we might not lose them all. They might shift to some other places, but the prognosis is not good.
Unfortunately, things are changing.
Look at that just for a moment, just that one fact for the whole country. What if our bird populations are decimated in that way? What impact will that have on everything else?
You've got to forgive me for a minute here, because I'm a simple-minded engineer. I'm not a real birder. But here's what I do know from just my outdoors end. If we lose any species, that will have ripple effects through many other species, because whether it's a duck or a seagull or even a sparrow, you know, they're going to migrate around. They're going to carry seeds with them. They in some instances will be a predator. In other instances, they will be prey. So if we lose any of that, that will impact the other critters that either they thrive on, or they are dependent on those.
Yeah.
So anything we lose in the ecosystem will have a ripple effect. It might not seem large at first. In fact, at first it will be unidentifiable. But over time, that's when things could start multiplying, and you get to the falling back to our coast. When we humans first levied the river, it seemed like a great thing. And was it? Sure, for economic growth and in navigation, definitely. But we did not recognize those impacts that would happen to the coast of Louisiana. And the bigger ones, the ones after the Second World War, the cutting of the navigation canals, the slicing up of the coast, those were certainly, no one had ill intentions when doing those. Those were done again to benefit the nation, and not only the region but the nation. But those unintentional consequences, those are the ones that are, it's no longer the boogeyman in the closet. It is the terrorist at the front door. If we don't address them, they're going to get us. I mean, it's like a rattlesnake that's ready to strike. And I'm an environmentalist. I like everything to live, but if it amounts to something's going to do me in, or I'm going to do it in,
Right.
I will do it in. And this is probably not a good comparison. I'd certainly like all critters have a purpose, even rattlesnakes and water moccasins.
Well, we're messing with the web of life.
That's exactly right.
And we don't know what we're doing.
Mother Nature and God need to do that. And the only thing we can do, and again, it is not complicated. It's not rocket science. All we have to do is mimic Mother Nature. If we do that, just like Lake Pontchartrain came back in a spectacular fashion, almost miraculous fashion, the coast of Louisiana can, without a doubt, we can stop the hemorrhage. We can. We will never see the coast that you and I knew as kids wander, but we can certainly, everything that's out there today can be preserved, and much of what was lost can be restored.
So what do people need to do to make this happen? What are some practical things?
Get engaged. You know, this is hard for all of us. We're all busy every day working, trying to just pay mortgages, pay utilities, take care of our kids and families. But here's the deal. If we are going to live down here, unless we decide to move above Baton Rouge or go to Houston or Atlanta, if we're going to live in coastal Louisiana, we all have to recognize that this levees alone stuff is not going to work. Maybe I can close with this. For those of us, again, like you and I that are this half century old or older, Hurricane Betsy, if we back up the clock to 1965, that was the storm of record for the region prior to Katrina. Hurricane Betsy comes in 65, and it's 125 miles per hour winds in New Orleans, and in many ways a much more critical path storm than Katrina. But after Hurricane Betsy, the damages were tremendous then. You know, St. Bernard flooded, much of the Ninth Ward, Gentilly flooded. But after a couple of weeks, you know, the city was without power, power was restored, and we started rebuilding. And the U.S. government, President Johnson, came in right after and said, it's never going to happen again. Uncle Sam's going to come in, we're going to build these levees, and New Orleans is going to be safe. Well, it started off like a house of fire, building levees right after this, after Betsy. Slowed down in the 70s. Some of the work slowed down. In the 80s, it was hardly any work. 90s, it was a trickling of work. 40 years later, almost to the day, Hurricane Katrina comes. Betsy was in September of 65. Katrina's in late August of 2005. Katrina comes. Katrina, geographically in the Gulf, is a much broader storm than Betsy, and certainly at one point is a more powerful storm. But when Katrina hits a shoreline, it goes east of the river. It is not as much of a critical path storm as Betsy. The wind field in New Orleans is less than Betsy. It is Katrina. The main impact is really the Mississippi Gulf Coast. But what happens in Katrina? We've got these levees around the city that are 15, in some areas 17 feet high. They are not only overtopped, they are in many instances, if you're in St. Bernard or New Orleans East, they're washed out. The big difference between Hurricane Betsy and Hurricane Katrina is the demise of coastal Louisiana. Well, we had this levee system in Katrina that was supposed to be orders of magnitude, head and shoulders better than we ever had before. It was not enough to stand up to Katrina because we had lost that coast that we had 40 years prior. So right. We've got to, this is where, I don't mean to sound like I'm preaching, but it's critical that all of us that live in coastal Louisiana, and if for that matter, anybody in the country, again, going back to the economic impacts of losing coastal Louisiana, just on the price of gasoline alone. Every time we get hit by a major storm, we're going to look at tens of billions of dollars of damages. And God bless everybody in the country that helps us out, but those damages will recur every time there is a storm unless we get this robust, self-sustaining coast back there again. And I guess my final message to everyone listening is that can it be done? Without a doubt, all we got to do is be committed to do it.
Okay. Well, I think that's the task at hand. And so for everyone who is listening to this, or reading the transcript, there will be links. There are links on the website to get in touch with the Pontchartrain Basin Foundation and the other groups that we're supporting with this. And I would encourage everyone to please get involved, donate some money, write some letters, raise your voices. Let's band together and fix this because it affects everyone. Now, here's the bottom line of the whole thing. Everybody else in the country, if you don't get this fixed, 2 million of these people from South Louisiana are going to have to find someplace else to live. And you don't want these people living next to you. I know these people. Let them stay down in Louisiana. Well, it's a serious situation, and we have way too much at stake. This incredibly rich culture, this beautiful land, hundreds of species of plants and animals and birds and aquatic life that will be gone forever if we don't. It is unimaginable that this, the consequences, and so there is no choice. We will do this. We have to do this, and we are counting on everyone's help. So that being said, Carlton, thank you very much for your time.
Wonder, I enjoyed it. Thank you, and thanks for everyone for listening.